Well, we continue our foray into Acts. Tempting as it was to talk about Psalm 23 and shepherds and sheep, we're going to stay in Acts. If this is what the lectionary has us at, I think it's something that we should pay attention to. And as a quick reminder, as I said last week, let's remember that Acts is a history, if not exactly the same kind of history that we're used to with dates and all that kind of thing that is so important to us now. It was a different kind of history, which doesn't mean that it's any less accurate or anything of that nature. It just means we need to take it under its own set of rules rather than impose them on us, impose our own rules on the book. And as we look at those things in Acts, what we're seeing is the transition from a small group of disciples into the church. And one of the reasons why we're looking at Acts is to see what in this book still applies for us. What is it that we can now take from here and look at the church that we're part of, this local community of faith, as well as the larger picture of the church, and see where do we connect? Where are the similarities? Well, as was read for us already, we have a very interesting story. One of my favorites, not least of which, because of the name of one of the principals, Tabitha or Dorcas, which means gazelle. What a beautiful name. I like them both. And so we read that in Joppa there was a disciple named Tabitha who was always doing good, helping the poor, doing all kinds of good things. She became sick and died. The body was washed and placed in an upper room, which is thrown in there for us to disabuse us of any notion that perhaps she just fell asleep or something of that nature. Most of us don't have any contact with dead bodies anymore. We have professionals who take care of that for us, and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is irrelevant. That's just the way it is. But back then, when someone died, one of the last things you did for your loved ones is you prepared their body for burial. And the chances of you being somehow fooled into thinking that they were still alive are more or less zero. And I think that's part of the purpose of the little extra bit about her being laid out in this upper room is just so we know there's no question that Tabitha had died. And some people heard that Peter was nearby, and so they sent word for him to come quickly. And we don't really know why. It doesn't say in the text, were they expecting a miracle, or did they simply want this disciple, this apostle, to come and provide comfort? We don't know. But he came, and he was taken upstairs to the room, and there were widows and other people in need who were standing around showing all of the things that Tabitha had done for them while she was still alive. And so Peter put them all out of the room for whatever reason and said, "Tabitha," after praying, "get up." And she did. Took her out, showed her off to all those saying that she was alive. A miracle by any other name. There's nothing you can describe it as other than that. Well, there's a strong sense in us to try and explain away miracles. I think that at some level, even us believing people, we're kind of embarrassed by miracles. And I'm not entirely sure why, but I think part of it has to do with this idea that if we admit the existence of even one miracle, then we are somehow obliged to explain every time we don't get a miracle when we ask for one. And I don't think that's really the case. We were not put on earth to function as defense attorneys for God. It's not our responsibility to explain things that we can't explain. And sometimes we are faced with things we can't explain. And we're better off admitting that and living our lives within that framework than somehow trying to explain away the miraculous, whether it's in holy text or whether it's in our own lives. We do enjoy explaining away the miraculous. Spontaneous remission is one of my favorite ways to explain away the miraculous. And I'm not saying spontaneous remission doesn't happen, that sometimes people simply get better from what they're really sick with for nobody knows why. But I think sometimes it is, in fact, a miracle. God breaking in and doing things that are outside the usual way the world works, outside the natural laws, as it were. A friend of mine who refuses to admit the possibility of coincidence. There's no such thing as a coincidence. They're all just little miracles. And whether you believe that or not, I think it's an interesting way to look at the world. Those moments when you think, you know, I've been meaning to talk to that person and I haven't seen them for a while, and then you bump into them at the mall or something. You can look at that as a coincidence, and there's certainly nothing wrong or evil about that, but is it not also possible that that might be a miracle? That God decided to make it easier for you to connect with that person? Well, it can't be a miracle if we don't believe that miracles still happen. And I think one of the reasons why this story is here and where it is in the book of Acts is to remind us that even though Jesus had left, the miraculous still happened. When Jesus was walking on earth, there were miracles. But Jesus was God. He was a human being and he was God at the same time, the only time that's ever happened in the miracle of the incarnation or the mystery of the incarnation. And so for Jesus to do miracles was one thing. And even when Jesus specifically commissioned his disciples to go out and do things and the miraculous happened, that was one thing as well. But by this point, Jesus is gone, and he's been gone for a while. And it's not unreasonable for those people then to think that, well, with Jesus leaving, he took the miraculous with him. It's not unreasonable, although it's wrong. And really, they should have known. Jesus talked about, I have to leave so that the Holy Spirit will be here. You will continue to do extraordinary things in my name. You will continue to make things happen that are unexplainable any other way, to paraphrase some of Jesus' last words. But it's not unreasonable for them to think that perhaps the miraculous was over. This story puts an end to that, because people coming back from the dead is miraculous. You can't explain that. I've never heard of spontaneous remission being applied to dead people. It's a miracle. God wrought this for all kinds of reasons, some of which we know, many of which we probably don't. But the two reasons that I see here are, first of all, as an undeniable demonstration that the miraculous still happens, and then, as we continue to read, this became known all over Joppa, and many people believed in the Lord. One of the things that came out of this miraculous resurrection, returning from the dead to life of Tabitha, was that other people heard of this and it changed who they were and how they believed in the world worked, and they became believers in the Lord. The miraculous often does that. Now, what I suspect some of you may be thinking is that that's all fine and dandy, and if somebody comes back from the dead, you'll appreciate it as the miracle it is. But until that happens, you know, what do you mean by the miraculous? I don't think anyone has been brought back from the dead at St. Mark's. No one's done it in my immediate circle. Well, the miraculous covers quite a lot. Some miracles are undeniably extraordinary, like resurrection. But as I alluded to last week, and as I think we'll be talking off and on throughout this time in Acts, we need to expand some of our definitions, and we need to expand our definition of the miraculous. Because, and I'll use myself because, well, I don't know any of you well enough to say for sure, but there really isn't any other way to describe the fact that I'm standing here preaching this morning compared to what I was at one point as, other than as miraculous. There is no chain of events that you can describe involving coincidence and a desire for a different kind of life that goes from where I was then to where I am now that makes sense. You can't come up with a string of reasons why I would make the decisions that I made, moving me from a person who didn't believe in anything in particular to where I am now. The philosophical notion of Occam's razor is kind of helpful sometimes. It's not 100% applicable, but for those of you who have forgotten your first year philosophy, Occam's razor suggests that if you have two explanations for something that are equally compelling, the more simple of the two is the one you should believe. And it works most of the time. You know, if we suddenly hear the sound of a motorcycle going by, it could be a very low-flying airplane. It could be somebody playing the recording of a motorcycle, but it's probably just a motorcycle. Because, well, that's what happens in Moose Jaw on Sundays. I count every Sunday we don't get interrupted by a motorcycle as a very, very small miracle. We can explain all kinds of things by jumping through mental hoops and inventing things. And I suspect that if you put in the effort, heaven only knows why you would, you could come up with a string of explanations for everything I did that has me moved me from where I was to where I am now. But the simplest explanation was an encounter with God and a transformed life. And that is a miracle. Because the transformation came in ways that I never would have asked for or even thought to ask for. The transformation came not exactly in spite of myself, but almost. When I came to the realization that there was something critically missing from my life, when I came to that understanding that God loved me enough to send His Son to die for me, to send His Holy Spirit to be with me, I changed into something else, but not something I ever would have planned or asked for. But when I look back on it, I wouldn't have it any other way. What's the bigger miracle? Someone being brought back from the dead, or someone whose life has been transformed? That's what we talked about last week. That's what we're going to continue to talk about. When we look at what happened in Acts, when we look at the story of the first church, what we see there are things that we can apply today. Not necessarily in detail. The story isn't in Acts to tell us that any time a generous-minded older woman dies, that she's going to come back from the dead. Although she may, I suppose. That's not why the story is there. The story is there to remind us that this still happens, that God does the miraculous. And that the things that have happened in our lives that we can't explain any other way can sometimes and frequently are used to move people closer to believe in the Lord. A dramatic miracle like someone coming back from the dead is going to affect a lot of people. A less dramatic but no less profound miracle of a changed life is going to move the people around you who knew what you used to be like closer to God. Because no matter how many of those explanations we can come up with for the transformed life we're now living, nobody else believes them either, because they see them as the miracle that they are. Some of you don't have that, I'm certainly not going to call it a benefit, but some of you don't have the experience of a dramatic change sort of in your early life or whatever. You've always been someone who's connected with the church, and you have never had that life outside in an obvious sort of way. And once again, the last thing I want you to do is to dismiss your own transformation in any way. The fact that other people aren't kind of shocked that you're still alive, like some people are who knew me when I was in my early 20s, doesn't change the fundamental reality of the miracle that you are, that God has wrought within you. The fact that you never spent a lot of time doing things that were illegal or at least extremely unwise doesn't mean that you didn't need a touch from God and that you received it. The miraculous happens today. It happens all over the world. It may not be as dramatic in our circles as it is in other places, but if you spend any time talking to missionaries, people who work in other cultures, you will hear stories of a more dramatic intervention of God reaching into this world. We don't know all why that works that way, but it seems to be the way it is. And on our bad days, we look at ourselves and say, we're not so much miracles as just, well, this is the way it is. And I understand that. After a long period of time, we sometimes forget how far we've come. And maybe this story will remind us that when it comes right down to it, the transition from a life centered on self, a life where God is at best second, if anywhere at all, The transition from that life into a life where God is first is every bit as profound as the transition from death to life, because that's exactly what it is. The transition from being someone who is indifferent to the things of God to someone who cares about the things of God is as miraculous and profound as what happened to Tabitha. Maybe not as dramatic. The drama isn't all that matters. It's helpful for lots of things, to be sure. But the fact that our particular miracle isn't one of those things that gets written up in an inspirational book doesn't change how inspirational it is. Doesn't change how miraculous it is. This story is in the book of Acts for, among other reasons, to let us see what's possible. To let us see that Jesus continues to be here in the form of the church in the same way he was here corporeally as a human being and doing the same things, but now through us. The miraculous is still possible because we haven't been left alone. We haven't been abandoned. Our church, us, can look at the book of Acts and say, this is the same church we're part of. There's an unbroken string from the beginning of the church to today. We are as connected to God through our relationship with him, through Jesus, through the power of the Holy Spirit, as Peter was. And when it's necessary, the miraculous, the dramatically miraculous, is just as open to us as it was to him. But until such time as that happens, let's not overlook the miraculous in all of us. And the miracle that has been wrought in turning us into the people we are now and the people we are becoming. Another theme in these days of looking at Acts is that of transformation. We are being transformed. The process was begun the moment we moved into that relationship with God, and it continues. Sometimes it seems by fits and starts. Sometimes we feel that nothing is happening whatsoever. But often when we look back at those times, we see some of those subtle changes that have made such a difference. Because the miracle of transformation is happening here, right now, with all of us, with each of us. Because one of the gifts of Acts is a reminder that the miraculous is always there. We see it when we look at each other. We see it when we look in the mirror. And maybe people aren't being brought back from the dead, but being transformed into the human being that you were created to be, what could be a bigger and better miracle than that? I don't know. I don't think there is one. And that miracle is still happening today.